step inside the tribe as our market experts share their boots-on-the-ground experience from the front lines of freight tech's emergence. I'm Tim Dooner, and this is Freight Waves Insiders.
Hello, and welcome back to the show where we go inside the world of the people who make freight happen. Right now, we got a knockout of a guest. It's Omar Singh. He's president and founder, Surge Transportation, Golden Glove specialist. Also, yeah. I heard you had a great night last night in Chattanooga with Kevin Hill.
Oh, yeah. We got into a little bit of trouble. Everybody took Ubers home.
So, when you people come out here for F3, right? You'll have some trouble with us. Right. Chattanooga's a fun town, though.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We had a good time.
Well, Omar, introduce yourself a little bit to the audience. I know you've been on, like, What the Truck, many of the other Freight Waves programming, but let's start fresh here. Introduce yourself.
So, thank you for having me on the show, first of all. So, I'm Omar Singh, president and founder of Surge Transportation. Been in business for 6 years now, operating as an independent brokerage.
It's only half the story, though. It's only half the story. You have an amazing tale to tell. Before we get there, just quick elevator pitch on Surge. If someone hasn't used you, they're not familiar.
So we are a full truckload brokerage doing mostly United States, recently got into some cross-border Canada because of all of the issues there. Our customers needed help. And our business model for customers is to try to help cover the freight that their primary providers can't.
Yeah.
So anything that's like short lead time, overflow, auction, spot, peak season, the really hard stuff that people don't want to do is kind of the space that we play in. And for motor carriers, you know, we try to be attractive, pay well, pay quickly, treat them well as a, you know, former driver. We really value that.
Empathy is big. Empathy is big in leadership. And I think we'll see where all of that is derived from. You know, it's funny. We were sitting in the green room earlier and we were talking about our kids and young people coming into the profession of transportation and how in our generation, this was not marketed to people looking to go into college. However, I know a little bit about your background. Usually on the show, I ask people when you were 16 years old, what did you want to be when you grew up? What were you going to college for? But you drove a truck through college.
Right. Yeah, I wanted to be an English teacher. So my tagline is I'm a teacher by training, trucker by trade. But I really wanted to teach, and I thought that I would get into it right after graduate school. But I ended up moving furniture. I was also a boxer, and I thought it was a job that would help me stay in shape, carrying things up and downstairs. And my boss really took me under his wing and very quickly said, "Hey, you think you can handle driving this packed van?" I said, "Yeah, I'll give it a shot." He said, "You think you can handle driving straight trucks?" I said, "Yeah, I'll give it a shot." And I got my Class B CDL, and then the next summer, he says, "You think you can handle tractor trailers?" Said, "Yeah, I'll give it a shot." And, you know, it just got in my blood, and I stayed with it. So
you, like, out of school, did you pursue that teaching idea that you had in head, or was it already in your blood? You were infected with transportation.
I got into Teach for America, and I taught for a year. I taught for a year. I did some speech therapy out in California. But I think that also helped me really get more into trucking because I got to start driving up and down the West Coast on the weekends and, you know, dip out to Pacific Highway and just go in San Francisco, San Jose, San Diego. And I started driving sleepers for the first time because when we were moving, it was all city cabs in the Washington, D.C. area. And I just loved it. And it really kind of gave me the road bug. Like, I think I want to really do more of this, you know?
So why aren't you a truck driver now? Why are you the founder of a company? Where did the road take you from that truck?
So that one truck turned into, I went to graduate school.
Yeah.
I was driving on the weekends, West Coast, went to graduate school. And I thought my plan was to be a poor teacher, right, forever. And then, but I thought that in furniture, you could make pretty good money. So I thought maybe if I drive over the road for a few years first, then I can save enough money, down payment on a house, kind of get established, get ready to be a poor teacher. And it just got in her blood, right? I bought a truck, I started driving over the road, and very quickly kind of was more enamored with that than I was with the idea of teaching. And then I bought a second truck, and officially I was an owner-operator driving, moving furniture, and then started my own trucking company. And then we had one truck turned into two trucks, and two, I think, was sixth, and eighth, and 14th, and 32. And so we ran kind of a medium-sized fleet, 100 trailers for 7 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Gotta ask you about the Golden Glove thing, though. So were you still boxing during all this time?
Well, it became hard. We moved lots of hours. So especially like summertime moving, I would pay for college for the whole year. But we worked, you know, 80 to 100 hours a week. And And so I felt like I was kind of strong and I was at least moving my body, but there's like no time to train and no time to want to do anything other than rest, you know, when you're off. Then boxing is not really the type of thing you can do part-time.
You ever knock anybody out we may have heard of?
No one you've heard of.
No one you've heard of. I've plenty of other people. He's not the ones we've heard of or that we're willing to disclose.
So,
but you found a company soon after that, right? Or you started at a company soon after that.
So after the trucking company went out of business.
Yeah.
So we went out of business in 2010.
Yeah.
And then so that's what allowed us to really develop the surge model, right? So I started brokerage in 2011 on the existing customer relationships that we had. But I kind of went to those customers and said, listen, I went out of business, went bankrupt. It's no fun. Don't recommend it to anybody. And I still want to be able to provide a valuable service to you guys, but it can't be by being the cheapest person, because I tried that and it didn't work. And if I do it in brokerage, it's not going to work. So what are ways that we can provide value to you where we can also be profitable at a reasonable rate, you know, to stay in business and be in your network? And so it changed from this model of trying to be the cheapest person to win as much, you know, primary business as you can on the RFP to say, listen, why don't you let your motor carriers do that? And we'll cover the things that they're not able to. Mm-hmm. But it also means you have to have a very collaborative conversation, which you say, I'm not going to win your RFP. You know, I'm not going to win anything because I'm going to be more expensive than them. And how do you do that in a fair way that makes sense from a pricing standpoint, where you can keep the service and you can attract motor carriers to want to also do that kind of business? So, but that model was born of selling on price and going bankrupt and, you know, losing everything.
It sounds like you learned some lessons from that, though. There's very few people I've sat next to and interviewed who are especially leaders in this business who don't have some dirt on their knees, right? Mm-hmm. What else did you learn from that bankruptcy? I mean, I think adversity is a great teacher.
Right. Well, I mean, so it affected everything, right?
Yeah.
It's a complete catastrophic failure of my professional career and my personal life. And I think from a customer standpoint, I, you know, learned how to try to have these more collaborative conversations and look for solutions that are more about, you know, a strategic and collaborative relationship than about price. And price always matters, right? You have to be in the ballpark, but like, how do you really provide value in a relationship? And then from a personal standpoint, I mean, it was, you know, just a catastrophic, family fell apart, you know, lost the house, kind of got into payroll taxes, fell behind on paying payroll taxes our last year in business, and there were some severe consequences for that.
Wow.
So I learned a lot.
Is part of that the reason why you're like, you know what, I gotta do it on my own, and I have to do it again?
Yeah, I think that when I started recovering, right, it took a while, so it was completely out of everything, you know, 2010, early 11. Started recovering toward the end of 11, probably anyone who gets into any kind of sales, which is if it's brokerage or anything, usually takes you about 6 months to kind of start generating income, right?
Sure does.
Yeah, at least that. So sort of at the end of 2011, I started saying, okay, we got food again, we can pay some bills and start getting caught up. And then kind of each year continued to gain momentum and started saying, you know, I kind of have this bug where I want to be out again. I have all these customer relationships and I was also operating in the national firms, and anybody will tell you, like, entrepreneurial environment has completely a unique set of challenges, right? But operating in a very established large companies has other challenges, which are like diversification of your accounts. It's really hard to do at a company that's been in business for 20 years and has 1,000 sales agents, right? How do you? So that was also part of it, because anytime a transportation manager would change, you kind of lose a little bit of business because you have to develop a new relationship. And then it was hard to get new accounts because they're all accounted for. So it was partly the bug of being, you know, entrepreneurial, but also strategically saying, well, how can I diversify from 4 accounts to whatever, 10, 20, 100, 400? Because it's really hard to do at national firms. So that was also, it was a little bit of a survival, you know, it was a little bit of a survival play.
Well, I mean, you obviously have a high tolerance for hard work. If anyone's ever trained for boxing, like in South Boston, there's this boxing gym, and I took like the free week of lessons. I lasted one day. I was throwing up all over the place because it's so much cardio.
Yeah.
It's nonstop moving furniture while you're in college, going through all these challenges. We get to 2016, you decide to start Surge. What was that like? That's climbing another mountain again.
Yeah, so that was the very end of 16 that we did that. And it was a wide unknown. It was, you know, kind of what's going to happen. And it was a, I would say, proof of concept years where, you know, our motor carrier is going to take our freight. Our customers actually going to work with us. Because before I went independent, I sort of felt out my customers to get commitments. Like, if I leave this national firm, will you work with me?
Yeah.
And they promised me they would, but like, what if then their boss says, no, you're not going to sign up a startup. Like, I don't care if you told them you're not going to. And so, you know, can we get a commercial lease? Can we hire lots of people? Can we get office furniture? Can we get, you know, TMS? Can we get factoring companies to give us credit? Like, it was scary. You know, it was really scary to go out and make that leap and then, you know, sort of lose all your customers at once, try to reconvert them. And it was scary, but we pulled it off. You know, it's a lot of work.
It is. And I'll tell you, I've worked in doing sales for freight in a giant company like FedEx and then a much smaller company. And I got spoiled by FedEx. I got spoiled by the big logo that opens doors, right? And then I get to the startup and wow, that is such a harder challenge. All those things you mentioned. Well, I mean, you don't really have the network. You've been established long enough. How did you overcome that, though, and convince people that you're someone they can rely on?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of it, the marketing and branding, I have to say, you know, my wife is a genius, really put us out there and really believes in the company. But so 2016, 17, I would say starting into 18, 16, 17, we said that's proof of concept, right?
Yeah.
This is working. And this business model works for at least what I call my four legacy customers that were with me from my trucking days. And they stayed with me through the brokerage and they stayed to help me open Surge. And so is this going to work with a lot of shippers, right? I know it's going to work with four. Is it going to work with a lot? And so we really just invested all of our profits into marketing and branding, trying to develop a sales team, which ended up being essentially my wife, Matt, and I, it was three of us just going around, you know, doing all of the conferences, events, sponsoring. I started doing some writing and public speaking at the events, just really get ourselves out there and bombard our logo, bombard our presence, bombard, you know, public speaking. And then, you know, it was the normal thing you do in these conferences. You get the attendee list and then you follow up. And so we got a appointment setter who was a really good caller, took all of the attendee list from the events that we went to in 2018 and sponsored. And we set up 250 in-person customer visits in 2019. So Matt and I lived on the road. Dina helped manage, you know, just kind of all of the travel and events, and kind of we were almost apart for a year. But it really laid the groundwork for what Surge is today. And of course, when COVID hit, market conditions were also favorable. But to have that pipeline of all of those visits that we did in 2019 and all of that investment. And it's a lot of it's enterprise level shippers. So you kind of go, you meet, well, you used to go and meet.
Yeah. Now you Zoom and meet.
Yeah, right. And they would say, we'll invite you to the next event. And so in 2019, the next event was 2020. So that pipeline just like instantly became that much more kind of in demand.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's sort of this perception out there that I think a lot of shippers have that all the brokerages, they just cleaned up, right? They cleaned up every trucking company, cleaned up during these past couple years. Is that true?
Well, I think I'm happy that trucking companies did well.
Yeah.
I'm happy they did because I owned a trucking company and I didn't do well. And, and it wasn't fun. So I'm happy for the carriers. I think some carriers cleaned up. Brokerages, no. I think if you look at the financials of some of the largest ones, they're not even profitable yet, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, we have to charge more, but we have to pay more, you know? So, I don't think anyone out there is really kind of gouging and hitting home runs or, what do they call a big rip? There's a great rip. Like that,
yeah.
I don't think that's really happening. It's really expensive and trucks are charging a lot and cost of operating is very high. I mean, in our company, we do a lot of offshoring and part of that was just being able to hire as quickly as we need to. But I think, you know, without those cost savings, I mean, our P&L would look very different, you know, so.
How different does Surge look now at the start of the pandemic than where we are, you know, in the spring of 2022?
So 2018, as we started going to market, we had 20 people.
Yeah.
And that sort of carried us to 2019. We didn't do a lot of growth because we were doing all of the sales and we were on the road rather than sort of trying to manage the accounts. We were trying to build new accounts. And so 2019 was a flat year. So going into 2020, we still had about 20 people. And now we're 260.
Wow.
Yeah. So in the last year.
How do you as a leader deal with that scale, that scale of just human interaction?
Yeah. It's been hard. It's been really hard. I mean, I would say the hardest part about the last 2 years is learning how to manage the cash flow, right? Learning how to manage the different pay terms of different customers and all of the carriers that want to get paid quickly and financing quick pay. But also, what do you do with 260 people, you know, if you don't have training and you don't have, you know, HR department, you don't have a background in enterprise level management. And so that I would say has been a bigger challenge than even bringing in new business. Is how do I motivate these people? How do I select these people? How do I provide career paths for these people? And how do I allow them to take on responsibilities once they learn? Because also, you know, I'm a firm believer in that, you know, giving people a chance. So even people who have no industry experience, you know, we'll hire them. So we'll train you. We have a split model. We'll find something for you, track and trace or a logistics coordinator or carrier sales, or, you know, we'll find something. We'll train you up. I've been doing this long enough. I can train you. And so then when you get that person trained up, now how do you give them, you know, more money? How do you give them opportunities? How do you give them responsibilities? And then have them give other people responsibilities. That's been, I would say, the biggest challenge as part of this project is just to, how do you do the human part of this, right? Because the freight part of it almost is, it's not easy,
yeah.
But the human part of it, I think, is the hardest.
Yeah, that career development thing. I mean, right. We come from an industry where for so long, leadership wanted you all to breathe the same oxygen and be in the same room. And even hiring's changed. Like, a big benefit of the pandemic has been remote hiring and remote workers. But at the same time, you lose that in-person connection. You don't get right. to see, smell the person, and do all the things because you know, the Zoom interview is done, you hit X. We're like, right. in-person interview, maybe you go out to lunch, maybe, right. you know, maybe you have a handshake, maybe you have a different type of conversation, but I think we're all adapting and you have to. It's been a challenging hiring market. Have you been able to get ahead of that one?
Yeah, well, believe it or not, I mean, I will say the ride that I will never forget is we signed our lease to move into downtown Chicago because I knew the growth was coming. The pipeline was there. All of the commitments were sort of there. And so we decided, we were traditionally based in Jacksonville, Florida. And I said, well, we got to move to the Mecca. We have to move to where the talent is because I need to hire 100 people. And okay, so now a little bit of experience is going to matter,
yeah.
right? And so we signed in February of 2020 the lease to move in March of 2020. And so the first week of March of 2020, we went in, we built 100 workstations, we're getting ready to hire, and then shelter in place, right? Yeah. You go, you know, what do you do? And so by May, just 45 days later, right, 47 days later, so we have to open shop. You know, I have to. So filled up my car with all the supplies I could and drove to Chicago. I was still afraid to fly at that point. Right?
Oh, really? I didn't know you had a fear of flying.
Yeah, well, no. I mean, because of the pandemic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like in general.
Right, yeah, yeah. No,
okay.
No, no. The pandemic. So no one, you know, there was shelter in place. And so I drove, and I was the only one on the highway, almost the only one, and a whole bunch of, like, motorcycle groups.
I remember those early days. It was beautiful.
Right, yeah, yeah. So I put my cruise control on 95, not because I'm a crazy driver, but there's just nobody on the highway.
Yeah.
And and then we started hiring in the office during shelter in place. And we were posting jobs everywhere. And I was bringing people in for live interviews. And everyone's like, are you crazy? It's shelter in place. You can't do that.
Yeah.
I said, well, how am I going to build a team? I need to figure out and build collaboration and train people. And so we got it started. And we got about 65 people that summer in Chicago. But then it started really becoming hard. And we needed a lot more. So then we started offshoring just out of need. Initially, I wasn't thinking about cost savings. I was thinking about, oh, I still need another 150 people. You know, how do I do it? And I had a lot of trouble reopening our Jacksonville office, but we finally did, and we're back in the office. You know, Florida was hit so hard with COVID that took a little bit longer to resurrect that office. And those were seasoned people also, so it was a little easier for them to work from home than someone brand new. So the way that we've been able to stay ahead of hiring is One, you have a good training program, so you can't only look for people with experience, yeah. but also offshore. We offshore in the Philippines, we offshore in South America, and then, you know, we resurrected Jacksonville. So we're getting ready to open Dallas. So
can
I
you
think
do the Jaguars too for Blythe?
We do some TPC golf, yeah. So, but yeah.
They could use a little resurrection,
right?
Jaguars.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I got to ask you though. So look, we're looking at the market near term and in the future, right? And there's clearly some headwinds in coming up, but you're thinking long term about Surge. What does the future look like for you guys?
So I'm excited about the future for Surge.
Yeah.
I believe in this company. I've been doing this business model. I live and breathe this organization, and I really believe in it. I mean, we're at a $300 million run rate right now, so very fast growing. You know, we're
nice
profitable.
Little air cowbell for that.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, and so I really think we can become one of the leading brokerages. I really think we can go, you know, north of $1 billion. As I've said, that the human part of this has been, I think, the most challenging. So, you know, we're 100% privately owned by me. There's no outside money, no investors. So it's been very challenging. But I think that we're finally at the point where I'm saying, hey, maybe we need to raise some money. Maybe we need to, you know, let some other companies that have been knocking on our door come in, because I'm really struggling with the human part of this, and I need help. I'm not trained in it, right?
Yeah.
And so I would love it if I could still work on, you know, carrier relationships and customer relationships, but someone's got to do all the other work. And I think that we're finally open to saying, all right, we need some help here.
I hear this venture capital is pretty popular in freight tech. Is that where you're looking? Are you looking more at private equity or private investors? What are your thoughts there?
You know, I'm open. I'm open. Yeah. I'm open to what I want is a partner who can help us pull this off. I don't want it to be just like a financial play. I don't really want to take over someone else's problems. I want someone who can really be a strategic partner to help us, you know, hire, you know, well, I got us to 250 people or the small team, and to get to 1,000, you know, it's just, how do you get to $1 billion in revenue? How do you do that from a people standpoint? And so more than the capital, I think that's, we're looking for a real partner to come in and make this a world-class company, you know, much larger than it already is right now.
Now, do you ever see yourself firing yourself?
Stepping away?
Yeah. Is that, yeah.
It's not on my roadmap at the moment. You know, I really enjoy what we do. I really enjoy Surge. My son's becoming a truck driver. We were talking about.
You're talking about 20-year-old getting in the cab?
Yeah. And so this weekend we're going to be driving. I'm going to be helping him pre-tripping and backing in. The same boss who got me into driving when I was 18 is lending us a truck this weekend so that we can spend. So I enjoy driving. I enjoy motor carriers. I enjoy logistics. But yeah, I guess probably one day I want to slow down. We work really hard.
Yeah.
We work a lot, you know, especially this business model.
It's stressful business for years.
Right. Yeah. And I'm a very hands-on, you know, I'm still in the operation.
That's why I asked you, because you're coming at this scale, right?
Right.
Now you got like 260 employees, but you've been the face of this company since 2019, as long as I've known you, and
right.
you still seem to be functioning in the same role despite the scale.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's gotten hard.
Yeah.
So I've had to learn, last summer I started for the first time kind of hitting the limitations of my own capability and had to kind of learn to say, hey, I need to pull back a little bit here. I mean, I was very stressed out and ended up in the emergency room just to check things out. Ended up then seeing a cardiologist, and he said, look, your blood, your heart, everything's fine. It's your stress. You're gonna kill yourself, right? So he's like, you got to pull back a little bit.
Do you have a tip for those of us in transportation to manage the stress?
Maybe just when to say when. You know, learn what you're, you know, if you're willing to go 100%, then go 100%. I think a lot of us do, but you can't go 110 and 20 like the whole time. Like my body started talking to me finally. And so I backed it down to 100. But yeah, so now when I travel, I used to try to also still be involved in everything. And now I have a good team though. We got a good team. We have, you know, we hired from the ground up. We promoted from the ground up. Everybody's really happy, and they're helping delegate. They're helping me to delegate and take responsibilities off. So, I think I would stay involved as long as I have a good quality of life, and the team that we're building now is starting to offer that.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, the cake is so much your recipe, right. You know? It feels good to eat it a little bit.
Right.
Aside from that, what's next for you? What's next for you this year? And where do you think we'll be at the end of the year? Do you think we'll be talking about a positive freight market or a negative one?
You know, I don't know. I'm really scared about the way rates are declining so quickly right now. I think, you know, different people use different indices for, you know, all of the forecasts, you know, 3 weeks ago were that, you know, demand is going to be a lot higher as, you know, we're going to have a little dip and then demand is going to go kind of through the roof toward the end of the year. And right now we've got, you know, people are spending less because of the war. They're spending less because fuel prices are, you know, a result of the war. So they have less money for goods because they have to spend it on fuel. And I'm not sure. I'm a little bit worried about where things are going to land. If you had asked me 3 weeks ago, I would have said, you know, the demand's going to be, you know, high and there's not going to be enough supply of trucks. Right now, I don't know. It's a little bit concerning.
The market's going to do what the market's going to do. But what you can do is forge great partnerships. If someone wants to forge one with you, where should we send them to?
So, you know, customers, real-time is kind of our new thing, the real-time APIs and TMS integrations. So that's an email address, realtime@surgetransportation.com. As far as carriers go, you know, we can't do it without carriers. So carrier sales is a standard inbox that we use. I'm also very accessible. info@surgetransportation.com will get you anywhere. And then also, you know, we can't do it without the talent. We can't do it without the people. So we have a careers page on our website. We have jobs at Surge Transportation. It's an email. But those are the three real components we need, right? We need customers, we need carriers, and we need talent. So without any of those three pillars, I mean, it doesn't work.
And there you go. The door is open to all of them.
Yeah.
Omar, thank you so much for letting us step inside your world today and learn a little bit more about yourself. And thank you for being so candid with your story, especially some of the challenges that you went through. I think that's a great benefit to all of our listeners out here. And people are just looking for guidance.
Yeah, it's been great to be on here. Thank you for letting me, you know, share the story a little bit and keep the conversation going.
Take care. This has been FreightWaves Insiders. I'm Dooner. Find me on Twitter at Timothy Dooner. That's D-O-O-N-E-R. You can find this show wherever you get podcasts. Just look up FreightWaves Insiders or download the FreightWaves TV app and watch our beautiful faces in HD. Also, I don't know if you knew this, Omar. We have a brand new FreightWaves app in the App Store, and that's got everything in it. It's got all of our videos, got all of our audio. It's got chat rooms in there. It's a good time. Download that one.
That's awesome.
Other than that, take care and don't be a stranger.
Step inside the tribe as our market experts share their boots-on-the-ground experience from the front lines of freight tech's emergence. I'm Tim Dooner, and this is Freight Wave Insiders.